And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folk. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Mercenary Musings World Headquarters in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folk. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well, Rob. You?
Oh, well, you know, a week ago, Mickey, we were getting pounded up here in Toronto in an ice storm that, you know, pretty well paralyzed the city, closed the airports. Complete flip-flop from then, though. We were down. We had about 10 centimeters of ice pellets, for God's sakes. Now we've got chirping birds and 14 degrees Celsius. So spring has finally arrived in your second favorite Canadian city.
Well, it's about time, Rob. I noticed last week that a baseball game was canceled because there were big icicles coming off the CNN tower and
hitting the dome
and cratering the roof. So
yeah, punctured a couple of holes in the Rogers Center roof, and a game against, I believe it was Kansas City, was in town then, had to be postponed, so they ended up doing a doubleheader. But That's probably one for the record books. A piece of ice puncturing a dome, resulting in a baseball game being canceled. So one certainly to remember.
Yes, certainly.
Okay, we're not here to talk about the weather, though, but we are going to talk about a rather stormy time, Mickey, in the metals markets. Good time to be talking about volatility. Coming off a turbulent week, aren't we, for the metals. Copper, though, inching higher, getting up about 2.5%. I believe that was its biggest weekly gain in about 2 months.
Yeah, it's all about volatility in the base metal markets, and a lot of that's geopolitically driven. It's been about 8 months since we talked about copper, and at the last show, it just surged above $3 for the first time in, three or four years, something like that, from its low of less than $2 in mid to late January of 2016. Was on quite a run. So the one-year chart still looks like a big run-up on copper. It's still up 20%, but it really has taken a breather since the first of the year.
Yeah, why do you think that is, Mickey? Because when you do look at how copper has traded since the beginning of January, it's been a real bouncy trade. You know, the price up and down, but really not gaining any traction.
Well, a lot of it's been driven by the specs. In August, there were record longs for the COMEX, record 125,000 net long contracts, something we'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. And since January, there's been a mass exit of those speculative fund managers out of the copper market. As we speak now, they are basically neutral longs and shorts with, I think, 3,800 contracts net long. Mm-hmm.
If copper is supposed to be a reflection of the global economy, Mickey, and economic conditions worldwide, what conclusion do we draw from this choppy trade? Or can we?
Well, I think we draw the fact that the specs control these futures and options markets for all the commodities. It's nothing we haven't known for a while. It's probably more evident because copper is Dr. Copper, and the world economy remains very strong all the way from the U.S. To the emerging market countries. So that's very bullish for copper. But by the same token, as these funds move in and out, they create quite a lot of volatility. I think the thing that we can take because of this, despite this max exodus, as Andy Holmes says, of the money men, it stalled a bullish price paradigm for copper, but it has not reversed it in any way, shape, or form. Right. You know, copper's down 4.5%, 11 cents on the year to date, but if you look back, it was up almost 18% in 2016, and it was up 30% last year.
And we received, I think, some pretty decent economic news, too, over the past week or so. Chinese GDP, the economy in China, growing by about 6.8% in the first quarter of the year. That was a little bit better than forecast, I believe.
Absolutely, but it really has been the Chinese specs that have been leading these markets since the lows in 2016. I think that we're in a paradigm where, although copper remains strong, demand remains strong, the specs are in control. We've known this for quite some time, but I also want to talk a little bit about what goes on in the seasonality of copper prices. And, okay. And you know, we've done exhaustive work since 2003 for copper, compiling the seasonality on a yearly basis. We normalize every year, and then we plot all those up, and then we divide into bull years and bear years and neutral years. And if you look at all those charts, there's a period of weakness from the beginning of May till, say, mid-June, and copper is generally neutral from March to the end of March to the first of May. So the fact that we have had a recent rising price is probably due to the seasonality. Now, what's unusual is very unusual for our 15-year composite, our bull years composite, bear years, and neutral years, is the downturn from the 1st of January through the end of the first quarter. Mm-hmm. So, and that can be, once again, attributed simply to the mass exodus of the funds from the speculative markets. Mm-hmm. Going forward, I think we should expect a neutral to a downturn in the market until mid-June.
Okay. That doesn't shake your resolve, though. I mean, regular listeners of this program, Mickey, will know that you have been bullish on copper, and you remain bullish on copper over the longer term, don't you?
Well, yeah, it's pretty simple, Rob. There's 85 million more people on this planet every year. A quarter of those do not have access to electricity. So as long as human beings continue to screw like rabbits, there's going to be increasing demand for electricity. It's not going to go away shy of a world economic collapse. So for the, I may be somewhat bearish in the short term on copper, but the fact that it's just remained basically range bound and flat this year from $3 to $3.25, I remain a mid to long term bull on the copper market.
Yeah, and while the rabbits continue to reproduce, Mickey, we're not seeing a lot of new copper mines come on. I mean, that's another part of this whole story, isn't it? I've seen one reporter, some comments from BMO Capital Markets saying that the pipeline of copper mines set to come online in the next few years is the smallest so far this century. So that's another thing that's going to be putting a bit of a constraint on overall production capacity.
Absolutely. That is a real concern. You know, the world uses a Bingham Canyon per year in new copper production. Bingham Canyon's produced something on the order of 19 million tons in its history, and you know, demand for copper last year was 23 million tons. So and it continues to increase 3.5 to 4% a year. Now, some of that supplied the deficit from the mine production to the demand every year is made up by scrap copper. Mm-hmm. But we're basically in a supply-demand balance and have been for a number of years. But going forward, it's a big question. Yeah. Where's the big copper mines? Where's the new copper going to come from? There's a few deposits that are known in the world, giant deposits, but they are fraught with onerous and unacceptable geopolitical risk in a lot of instances. We're just not putting enough money into exploration, finding enough copper.
Yeah, and when you do find a deposit, that's worth getting out of the ground. It's not like you can just flip a switch and the mine's up and operating. This takes quite a while.
Yeah, you're looking at 10 to 15 years from exploration to development, permitting, and production on a giant copper deposit. And the real concern is we're not finding that many anymore. And there, if they have geopolitical, little geopolitical risk, let me say, they're deep and they're hard to get to. Mm-hmm. So we're just not finding enough high-grade, good, easily developable copper deposits. Grades continue to fall, both with production and discovery.
How have the equities of the copper producers been trading? The underlying price of the commodity, as we've gone into great detail, Mickey, choppy since the end of the year, not making a lot of headway. Is that being reflected in the stock performance?
Yeah, I think so, Rob. You know, the copper producers, and there's few standalone major copper producers, but they had returned good results in 2017, but they really are driven by the copper price and geopolitical risk. You know, the world's largest copper producer, Freeport, is increasingly has a difficult situation in Indonesia. So, you know, I don't really play the big copper producers, but I'm always looking for good juniors with good copper projects. Pretty hard to find, but I'm actually leaving on a jet plane early tomorrow morning to go look at a copper prospect.
Okay, and then after that, you'll be getting back onto several planes, Mickey, because you have a couple of conferences coming up as well, one in New York and one in Vancouver. What can you tell us?
Well, that's true. May 8th and 9th, I'll be in New York City for Mines and Money, with, I think, three stage appearances on various commodities and panels and other duties. And then immediately after that, I fly to Vancouver. And on May 15th and 16th, I will be speaking at the Cambridge House Conference in Vancouver.
Okay. Great stuff. Well, you travel safe, sir. We'll reconnect in about a month's time.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.